Hi, I'm Maggie Brennan, music director here at WCBE. We're excited to announce our new web exclusive, Live from Studio A Replay, where you can listen to some of our best Studio A sessions. We're dedicated to bringing you great music from around the world and from right here in Central Ohio. And that type of extraordinary service is only possible with your support. So please, consider making a donation of any amount by clicking the red donate button at the top of the page and keep the music going. And we thank you for your support.
Now, before you change channels thinking that this is an ESPN early morning show with men in plaid on boats, let me assure you that Trout Fishing in America is a folk rock group made up of Keith Grimwood on bass and vocals and Ezra Eidlett on guitar and vocals. And that's them right there.
Our signature sound.
Okay. Now, these two first achieved international acclaim with When I Was a Dinosaur. A frequent selection on the Dr. Demento program, but they have been nominated for four, count them, four Grammy Awards, including one for 2008's Big Round World.
A friend of ours is quick to point out we are four-time losers.
Yes, that is a good friend.
I just want to mention, though, that it is a rare and unusual thing for an independent label like ourselves to have four trips to the big show.
That's Trout Records, you know, that's
very
exclusive label.
Yes. Exclusive to one, is that what you're suggesting?
I believe so.
Okay.
Well,
days gone by, it used to be called a vanity label.
Yeah,
now it's an indie.
Yeah, now it's self-publishing.
That's right.
Which is...
really cool now.
Yeah, cool. They have, with album titles like Hot to Trout, Stark Raving Trout, and Truth is Stranger Than Fission. I'm sure Fishing.
Fission. I like fission, though. I like
Truth
that.
Truth is Stranger Than scientists. Fission. Yes. Well, you know, the station manager here is a reformed scientist, so he will enjoy that.
Cool.
That what fission. Inadvertent pen, my malapropism. I can't speak today. Welcome, Keith and Ezra.
Thank you so much.
It's very nice to actually finally get here. That was good. It took a lot to get here, but we're here.
It did, but, you know, once you make it to Columbus, you don't want to leave.
That's the truth.
I mean, you look outside at the weather we had today.
Beautiful. Just gorgeous.
Beautiful.
Those rain clouds.
Beautiful clouds in the sky. You don't want to leave. All right. As a way of asking you about why you write for kids, why you have written so many children's songs, I thought I'd start with some of your lyrics. For example, you have a song that I can no longer identify with called My Hair Had a Party Last Night.
This is true.
And it has lyrics, which I hope I don't get in trouble with your publisher for reading a few of them.
No trouble. We are the publisher, so you have my permission right now.
That's Trout Tunes Publishing.
Yes, I should have gotten that in writing.
We're the roadies as well.
My hair had a party last night. It must have got into a terrible fight, because when my head hit the pillow, it wasn't looking all right. It was looking all right. My hair had a party last night.
Why don't you just let us sing a little bit of that for you, okay?
I would like to hear some of that with the appropriate hair motions.
Yes, here we go.
My hair had a party last night. It must have got into a terrible fight. Just when my head hit the pillow, it was looking all right. My hair had a party last night. My hair had a party last night. When I lay it down, everything was all right. It started out friendly, but there must have been a fight. My hair had a party last night. Early in the morning, I get out of my bed. The birdies are singing outside. There's waffles on the table and a cold glass of milk. I got a warm, heavy feeling inside. I can't wait to go to school and I love myself. I'm the captain of the football team. The alarm goes off and I hear mom yelling and I realize it must have been a dream. Whoa, my hair had a party last night. It must have got into a terrible fight. When my head hit the pillow, it was looking all right. My hair had a party last night. My hair had a party last night. I lay down, everything was alright. It started out friendly, but there must have been a fight. My hair had a party last night.
Okay, for this part of the song, we generally ask everybody listening to make your hair have a party. Shake your head, put your fingers in it, really mess it up. Now reach over and make your neighbor's hair have a party, even if they don't have very much.
I pick up a brush, I pick up a comb, but look at the scissors, but I leave them alone. There's a lizard that lives in the rocks by the sea. This morning that lizard looks a lot like me. I try to wet it down, but it only makes it worse. The calic in the back is a family curse. I pick up up a cap and I put it on my head. Wish I was dreaming back in my warm bed. Whoa, my hair had a party last night. Yeah, must have got into a terrible fight. When my head hit the pillow, it was looking all right. My hair had a party last night. My hair had a party last night. When I lay down, everything was all right. It started out friendly, but there must have been a fight. My hair had a party last night. Last night. Last night.
Well, that's excellent.
Thank you very much. You.
And I notice that both of you have hair that could have a party.
Actually, Keith's is probably more party-like than mine, but we both have party. His hair, he's had a bad hair life.
Yeah, it's gone
beyond party hair to just bad hair life.
Hey, let's get back to that original question. Why do we play music for kids?
Okay.
We play music for pretty much everybody. We started out, we've been playing together now for over 33 years. We started back in 1976, and we played music for our peers. And we always have. We play music for adults, whatever. But in 1977, a teacher came and asked us if we would come into the classroom and play some music for her classes to show the kids that music came from people, didn't just come from the radio, didn't come from the television or something, kind of demystify that. And we went in, and we didn't know any kids' songs at all. We thought it was a great idea, so we went in and we played Beatles music, and we played folk music and blues and stuff like that. And real music for these kids, and loved it. And so we continued to play music for kids all through the years, but we didn't start actually writing for kids until we had kids ourselves. I guess that was in the late, or in the 80s or so.
That last song was inspired by something my son said. He looked in the mirror and said, "Hey, Dad, look, my hair had a party last night." And as soon as he got on the bus to go to school, I got on the phone to call Keith and tell him, I don't know what it sounds like, but it's our next song. And you know, it's sort of the way we have grown by playing regular music for kids initially and then starting to write. And being parents of children, our kids' music was sort of different from what was coming out at that time. Instead of being sugary, sweet, and overly educational, it was kind of, I don't know, skeptical at times and funny and entertaining, you know, to kids. You know, just kind of fun to listen to.
Yeah, I wrote a song called "My Hair." My kids made me lose my hair last night, uh-huh. And that was it's a similar vein, not quite the same. So, how do you consider audience in your song selection when you're talking about a replay for everybody? What is it that you identify as universal? Just everybody having hair, or what are the other things that you like to hit on the topics of your songs?
Wow.
Everyday life. Just common stuff that happens either at your house or out. Stuff that we've all felt one way or the other, or things we have observed that strike our fancy.
That's kind of what we do in our songs. We take a subject, any subject that we see, and kind of look at it from a different angle, you know, than may have been inspected before.
I'm going to lead us into this next song. This is one night. Keith was out with a buddy of ours. She's an artist, and she makes incredible art out of recycled bottle caps, earrings, art, fish designs, all kinds of really wonderful stuff. And they went Cajun dancing. As long as I've known Keith, he's just been a dancer. He'll do any kind of dancing that's out there. They went Cajun dancing. He came back, and he had these words that he'd started. He'd watched
It was a Zydeco dance. We were watching some Zydeco, listening to Zydeco music, and everybody out there is dancing. She's showing me how to do the Zydeco. It's kind of the difference between the Cajun and the Zydeco dancing. So I'm out there dancing, and I happen to be looking around, and nobody is smiling. And I was wondering, why aren't they smiling? She says, well, most people don't smile when they do these dances. They do all these wild moves, but they're just kind of real cool and nonchalant when they're dancing. Except for her, of course. I look over at her, and she's got this big grin on her face. And, well, so do I. So that's where this song came from.
All right.
Smile on the dance floor, and it's a light that won't turn off. Everybody here so serious, so cool and nonchalant. The eyes that flash like lightning, melt your heart like butter. Look anywhere you want, but you won't find another. She's the only smile,
She's the only smile you can dance for a country mile. She's the only smile. She's the only one. She's the only one. Dancing to a different drum. She's the only one. She's the only smile on the dance floor. It's a light that's burning bright. Everybody here is having fun, but you couldn't tell tonight. Her feet follow every move. She's done this dance before. But won't be time to leave here till she walks out the door. She's the only smile. She's the only smile. You can dance for a country mile. She's the only smile. She's the only one. She's the only one. Dancing to a different drum. She's the only one. Couples dance so formal. Some dance wild and free. Old and young, rich and poor, moving to the beat. She leans closer to me. I don't know what to do. Tells me she just noticed that I've been smiling too. Not the only smile. Not the only smile. Now I've been grinning for a little while. She's not the only smile. Not the only one. Not the only one. Dancing to a different drum. She's not the only one. Not the only smile. No, she's not the only smile. Now I've been grinning for a little while. She's not the only smile. Not the only one. Not the only one. Dancing to a different drum. She's not the only one.
And I'm pleased to say that during that song, they were both smiling. And so it was a great, you guys look like you're really enjoying what you're doing. And that's so much better. I look around every now and at work and I don't see people smiling like this. But that's just me.
It's true. People don't always like what they do. I feel very blessed to be happy doing what I'm doing. Lucky. Not everybody gets a chance to do that.
For years, we looked at artists up on the stage, artistes on the stage, that were suffering to bring you their talents and mm-hmm. art, and we couldn't quite relate to that. We have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
We like That's what good. We do.
Well, tell me how you do what you do. Who is? How do you write your songs? You talked about picking up the lyrics off of your son, the title of a song for which I hope he was compensated. Who?
I supported him. His sorry, but he's really a great guy.
So how does that work? You pointed to him and said that Keith was the songwriter.
No,
the lyricist.
That. No, you're
lyrics.
totally guessing.
What happens?
You're putting words in my mouth. Go ahead, speak, Keith.
What generally happens when we write, and we've been writing together a long time. First thing we did when we first got together was write a song. But I'm a journalist. I'm a note taker, and I generally start the lyrics. I walk around. I get up every day and I write something. I write many bad things, hundreds of bad things, because I don't care. I'm just taking notes about what's going on and what I think about it, and I just collect it. Ezra, on the other hand, starts with music. He sits around playing a guitar, noodling with this and that, and we sort of meet in the middle and become each other's editors. I don't finish things because they will be better finished with Ezra, with lyrics.
And vice versa. We both expect and look forward to the other one throwing down their part on what we may generate. So that's just the beginning. I start with music. He starts with lyrics at the beginning. But then we're all over each other's stuff. It's a true collaboration.
Mm-hmm. And so how do you figure it out if you don't like something that he's written, or if you really like something he's written? How do you, what's the feedback? Is it bloody?
Consensus.
It's about the music. It's not about you anymore. You have to test drive it. You throw it out there, and you can feel when it's not right. You can feel when it's disingenuous. You hear it going along fine, going along fine, and all of a sudden you go, wait a minute, I don't believe that. Mm-hmm. So honestly, we just sort of throw it out there until we both believe it.
We have the same ear for that, although we come from entirely different perspectives, seriously different people. What we perceive as true to the music or true in art, even for that matter, you know, we go into an art gallery, look at art, and 9 times out of 10, our favorite 3 paintings in a gallery will be the exact same, in the same order.
It is the weirdest thing. We are such different people. He's so much more the extrovert. I'm more the introvert, quieter. He's out front. He's tall. I'm average height.
For a woman.
But, I mean, when it comes to art or something, we just tend to agree, you know, what we like.
Okay. Now, you talked about testing out your lyrics. I'm curious. You guys have a lot of wordplay. You have fast lyrics. Do you test those out on people and see whether you're going too fast, too slow? You've got a song, Isn't It a Puzzle?
We didn't test that out. We just liked the feel of it. I mean, but the testing was, and the testing always is, in front of an artist, in front of an audience. You play the song in front of an audience, they will either respond or they won't. And it's the most organic business you can be in. It's just, if it works, it just shows all over the place. And if it doesn't, they just leave in droves. So we've been doing this for 33 years, and I love it. And it's always an honest response from the audience. We find that children's audiences tend to be a lot more honest. Adults will sit through stuff that's kind of boring. I mean, they'll be polite, but a kid will just go crazy. ADHD right up front, they'll go crazy on you. So
I went to a concert with my daughter, and she was doing that. Mm-hmm. Even though we were in, and I'm not kidding about this, the very last row because we had just gotten the tickets, she was yelling. I'm sure the person on stage could hear her. I'm sure. Kelly, somebody.
Somebody.
Oh, man, that's embarrassing.
Hey, you know, in It's a Puzzle, somebody's not getting it because in there's a verse about us going to Idaho. Mm-hmm. And the verse goes, do you want to know why I want to go to Idaho? Got to go to Idaho. Hadn't been there. That is the only state we have not been to. Mm. And I threw that in there hoping that someone would hear and say, hey, they hadn't been to Idaho. Let's get them there. But nobody has done it.
And that's been years, too. So I don't know what it is.
What is it that you have against Idaho?
We don't have a thing against us.
Is it just you don't eat potatoes?
In fact, if there are any promoters from Idaho listening to this, hire us now.
Yeah. Break this. Break this. But then you'll have to write a new lyric.
No. Believe me. Because it's true then. It's true when you wrote. Keith and I have had long discussions about this, too. We wrote a song about a restaurant that went through a lot of changes. Ultimately, it closed a few weeks ago. But I still think that the song has validity. It was true when you wrote it. Beyond that, things can change. The song represents a little time capsule.
Okay. All right. So are you going to do that one?
No, we're going to do another song.
One? Okay,
we're
going to
be old and cranky songwriters and do stuff that we have an agenda here.
Hey. I've noticed that, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what is
agenda.
What is your agenda?
You're getting so old you can't remember your agenda anymore.
Oh, wait a minute.
That's a little hint, Keith.
Okay, that's fine.
You're getting
fine.
So old.
I understand. This is a song that was inspired by a trip we took to Chico, California. And we were in a diner. And I was reading the menu. It was about a 40-page menu, and I got to page 39 and a half, and I was reading the fine print, and I realized that I was 1 week away from being able to eat off of the senior's menu.
Oh.
And I thought about going for it, and I was afraid I would get carded, and then I was afraid I wouldn't get carded. So anyway, that inspired this song about acting your age at this age. It's the title cut from a little EP that we did. It's called Who Knows What We Might Do.
He's pushing the grocery cart, looking for deals. But all of a sudden, he kicks up his heels. Someone his age, just the thought of it. He hops on the back as he takes it outside. It's a cart, it's a scooter, a ticket to ride. Someone his age, just the thought of it. Your age is getting harder and harder to do. With the age that you're feeling inside, it's more the size of your shoe. Who knows what we might do? Who knows what we might do? She's somebody's mother, in sensible clothes, but she's got a secret and nobody knows. Someone her age, just the thought of it. She put away money in the tip of her shoe, went to a parlor and got a tattoo. Someone her age, who'd have thought of it? Acting your age is getting harder and harder to do. The age that you're feeling inside's more the size of your shoe. Who knows what we might do? Who knows what we might do? They're older than dirt. They're laughing and blushing and starting to flirt. People their age, just the thought of it. She used to teach tango. He sang in a band. By the end of the song, they're too tired to stand. People their age, who'd have thought of it? Your age is getting harder and harder to do. With the age that you're feeling inside's more the size of your shoe. Who knows what we might do? Who knows what we might do? Who knows what we might do? What we might do?
Wow, that guitar sounds good, Ezra.
That sounds great.
Man, that guitar. That's a baritone 12-string guitar.
That is a very fancy guitar.
It's
a very beautiful guitar. I want to tell you, though, that sound depressed me, and here's why.
Uh-oh.
Even though it was up-tempo. When you were talking about the size of your shoe, I realized that you're here in your stocking feet. You're wearing sandals. I'm the, wingtip guy over here in the corner, and I'm feeling old. But
man.
You're younger than I am.
These are size 17 sandals over there for Ezra, by the way.
So I guess technically that makes me the oldest guy in the room. so you should feel better. You're the youngest.
Yeah. The young guy in wingtips. That makes me feel like Michael P. Keaton or something like that. But tell me about writing music for Steve Garfinkel's play. You did that for P's and Q's, the ABCs of manners. How was it writing for somebody else's lyrics that wasn't this sort of organic thing you described?
It was our lyrics.
It was.
We ran on the concept of the play from the very beginning.
Oh, okay.
But it was his story. And we would come to a point where we were trying to express something in a song, and or our song was something that they wanted to express in a dance form or in some, what do you call it, dialogue. But our songwriting, beginning to end, was pretty much the same way we normally write.
Well, this was Houston's Main Street Theater, and they wanted to do this funny play about a look at manners. And they came to us because they know we are the manners experts.
Right. Yeah.
They came right away. They thought, you know, these guys would know all about that sort of thing. So it was interesting for us because that's not a subject we would normally tackle. We're not preachy. When we play music, we're not gonna teach you things. We're not gonna really teach you good manners, honestly. We more teach through bad example than good. Mm-hmm. So it was a challenge for me, and we met with them early on and said, look, if we're gonna do this, we don't want to be talking down to these kids, we don't want to be preaching to them. Let's do it across the board where the adults are getting as much criticism as anybody else. There's nothing like an adult telling you how to do it and then having them turn around and do it wrong.
I was under the impression that was parenthood. You're telling me
exactly.
I shouldn't be doing that. No. Oh.
But we had a great...
It'll come back and haunt you.
Yeah, it already has.
We had a great time doing that. And it was a big year for us, too, because right after that play came out and everything, we became published authors.
Oh, excellent. And that's a different feeling than being published songwriters.
Yeah, it is different. And it's the first project that we've ever done that wasn't ours. A publishing company from Canada, Secret Mountain, got together with our manager, and they engaged a fabulous French-Canadian illustrator with a girl's name.
Hey, wait a minute. That's not nice. His name is Stefan Georges.
It looks like Stephanie to me.
Okay.
Anyway, and put a beautiful children's book together using one of our songs, Chicken Joe, as the basis, the bulk of the book. Then in the back of the book is a CD with 11 songs on it. And
a smiling cat playing guitar.
That's right.
Chicken Joe is one of my cats. He sleeps out there with the chickens. He's very smart. It gets cold out there, and so he goes and hangs out in the hen house. And that's his name, Chicken Joe. Mm-hmm. And all the animals in the book, there's the dog named Miss Kitty. That's a real dog. That's Ezra's mother's dog. She wanted to have a dog where she could say, "Here, kitty, kitty," and a dog would come running up.
It sounds like a lot of confusion for the animals. They're really, they don't know who they are.
Yeah, we write this true experience. My son's parakeet's name was King Kong, a very tough, tough parakeet.
Right, yeah.
So anyway, that book is called My Name is Chicken Joe, and... we're not going to play it for you or anything like that, but it is available.
Well, and what made you decide which you were going to put in here? They were just the animal-themed ones.
No, all those songs, they kind of tied it back to the animal themes, but if you look at them carefully, they're not really... They could be about anything. They somehow drew pictures to go back to the animal themes in the other 10 songs. But that one song is definitely straight ahead for Chicken Joe. That's definitely about Chicken Joe.
Well, they've
asked us also to write some more, too, like a couple of more books, too, and that's what we're working on now. That, as well as a project for adults. We're doing two things at the same time. I have to do that. A lot of times when I'm writing lyrics, I can only be serious for a certain amount of time, and I've got to go to the stupid. I've got to balance it, and I can only write adult music for so long, and I've got to write something for kids. And with the kids show, we still have serious songs in there, too. So it's not just funny, funny, funny. Because if it's all funny, it's all the same. There's no contrast.
Just the same as if it's all serious. Just go ahead and hit me upside the head with a brick. You know, I like to have some relief from one or the other.
So is this Chicken George 2? Is that what
Chicken
you're,
Joe.
Chicken Joe. Joe. Sorry, Chicken Joe 2. Is that what you're looking
at?
I'm not sure
exactly what the title will be, but it will be the second in a series of three that we've agreed to do. And I'm really excited about it. The art is just tremendously beautiful.
This one is done so well for us because when you think about it, people want to share something with their kids. They want to share things that they love. And sometimes it's hard to find something that you love that you want to share with your kid that your kid will love too. You try music. Well, that works. And you try books. Sometimes that works. But this is books and music, and you can both get into it.
It's chocolate and peanut butter together in one package.
I love it.
Tell me about covering other people's music. You write a lot of your own material. What makes you decide that you're going to do somebody else's stuff?
It speaks just like listening to a song that we write speaks to us. A song somebody else wrote speaks to us in a way.
We did a cover of Dixie Chicken, Lowell George's Little Feet Dixie Chicken. It's a great duo recording of Dixie Chicken. We play it. We send royalty checks to those to the Lowell George Foundation or wherever it is.
Naked Snake Publishing.
We just send it out there. Okay. We don't let that stand in our way. We co-write, too. Big Round World was the title of our newest CD, and it was nominated for a Grammy Award and all that. But that song was co-written with a guy named Luther Gray with a Bambula 2000 band out of New Orleans. We play a bunch of festivals with them.
Okay.
Love to co-write, love to cover. I think it's cool. Don't you like hearing other people cover somebody else's song?
Oh, yeah.
I love to hear that.
I've made it actually exclusive. I only cover other people's songs when I play. So. Well, let's do these two songs. Start out.
Are we good? We're good.
Are we good? We ready to go? Where home is, but I'll know when I find it. I don't know where home is, but I'll know when I find it. Travel hard, travel long, I've been weak and I've been strong, and I don't know where my home is.
but I'll know when I find it. And I don't know where peace is, but I'll know when I find it. I don't know where peace is, but I'll know when I find it. Always restless like the wind, I'd be lost without my friends. And I don't know where my home is, but I'll know when I find it. Home, sometimes it almost feels like falling. Home, I can always hear it calling. No, I